or spoor. And they weren't watching their surroundings with the special attentiveness you'd typically show if you were searching for game. Before Blaze could make sense of that, the glimpse skipped forward. The sunlight was getting stretched out, and the two women were no longer joking or speaking, just paddling steadily, their faces composed in a martial mask. They made for a large island. The woman in the rear set down her paddle and picked up her spear. As the canoe skimmed into the reeds, the first woman took up her weapons too. She jumped clear as the boat smacked to a stop in the mud. Her sister leaped out beside her. Ducking low, they advanced through the high grass. Once they'd gained some ground, they ducked behind a tree, switched to their bows, and surveyed the way forward. After a moment, the first woman, who had done most of the joking earlier, and who appeared to be the older of the two, though they were both young, pointed ahead through a lane of trees. The younger woman leaned forward, then nodded. They crept forward with the stealth of wild cats, entering a shallow ravine. The floor was littered with bones. The two women glanced down at them, jaws hardening. Blaze had seen more than enough bones to recognize them as human, but they were much smaller than most of the ones he'd encountered. The air stank of death. At the end of the ravine, a shelf of rock sheltered a cave of unknown depth. The two sisters spread a few paces apart and advanced on the hole. They were still 30 feet away, when long, dark legs unfolded from the cave and grabbed tight to the rock, dragging a nightmarish head and torso behind them. The thing that emerged looked partly human, but its rear legs were spiderish, while its front limbs were more supple, practically octopoidal. Its eyes were much too large, and its lips were permanently pulled back from its teeth, which looked more like sharp ridges of rock than anything human. The two women loosed their arrows. With frightening speed, the creature launched itself to the left, the arrows cracking against the rock. The monster jumped from the wall and skittered toward them, scattering bones with its pointed feet. Both women got off another shot, one arrow passing wide while the other struck the creature in the chest. This didn't seem to hurt it too much, but it paused the thing for just long enough for the soldiers to throw aside their bows and ready their spears. The creature lashed out at them, its arms snapping forward like tentacles, tipped by curved claws. A diagonal line of blood popped across the older woman's stomach. She ignored it, jabbing at the monster's middle. The enemy yanked itself back, and the younger woman circled to its right, harrying it with her spear. The thing moved with supernatural quickness, its claws snapping at them like whips. But the sister soldiers fought like they shared the same mind, one swinging back from an attack while the other pressed in from the flank. The reach of their spears saved them from anything worse than a few shallow cuts. Methodically, they inflicted one stab after another. Nothing mortal, but the creature was bleeding yellow fluid everywhere. It was only a matter of time before they wore it down. It seemed to realize this too. It backed toward the crevice it had emerged from. The younger woman lunged forward, looking to impale it. A bone turned under her front foot. Her ankle went out from beneath her, spilling her to the rocky ground. The beast slung itself forward. Claws tore into the woman's body. A blade-like foot pierced through her chest. The older of the two screamed and charged. The thing tried to back up, but its limbs were embedded and entangled in its victim. It stumbled to the ground, belly exposed. The soldier stabbed it, then again. It curled on itself, arms flailing. She didn't stop stabbing until it wasn't moving, except for the blood oozing from its wounds. She used the butt of her spear to push the carcass out of range, then kneeled next to her sister. The younger woman was blinking rapidly, hands clutched to the stab wound, to her chest. Blaze knew at a glance she wouldn't leave the island. The older woman tried to pick her up, but she'd been cut up herself, and her legs didn't have the oomph. She ran her hands down her face. "Stay here. I'll find something to drag you back with."
"Don't go."
The younger woman grabbed at her sister's ankle.
"Don't leave me here with it."
The action seemed to suck the last strength from her. She fell back, breathing shallowly and quickly. A ripple of despair passed over the older woman's face.
"I'll stay."
The younger soldier died before her sister would have made it to the canoe. The older soldier sat with her head rested on her knees for a while, then stood and went back to the canoe, returning with a flap of canvas. She put the body of the younger woman on the canvas and dragged her back to the boat, lifting her inside. When this was done, she went back to the ravine, used a bone knife to cut off the creature's head, and brought this to the canoe as well. The glimpse leaped forward to the woman returning to her village and showing them the severed head of the child-eating beast. Her people cheered until she showed them the body of her sister. Things skipped ahead again to a feast spread across the village dock. The soldier ate a little, but mostly drank. One person after another came to talk to and thank her. She began the night stone-faced, but ended it able to laugh, if only a little. The feast ended. The vision hopped from one moment of time to the next. The woman out on patrol by herself in her canoe, trailing her fingers in the water, and yanking them out just as the Ziki Oko started to arrive. Turning down requests to eat with others at the group table, and eventually taking all of her meals alone in her own house. Lying in bed with her back to the door as someone knocked on the other side. Another feast arrived. Somehow, Blaze knew it had been 1 year since the woman had returned to the village with the head of the child-eater. This time she ate and drank and laughed with the others. One by one, they staggered off to their homes or fell asleep next to each other on the docks. When she was at last alone, the woman went back to her home. She picked up her spear and her bow and a bag. She placed these in her canoe, climbed in, and shoved off. She paddled into the darkness. The glimpse receded, blackening around the edges. Blaze strained to hold onto it. But it was gone before he saw what had come of the woman. He thought he knew, though. He thought that she'd never come back. He was alone on the banks of the island. The air shimmered like curtains in a gust of wind. A few last specks of stream hung in the air in front of him. He reached for them with his hand. They faded before he could touch them, yet he knew with uncanny clarity how they'd delivered him the glimpse. If all nether and ether were connected like Era claimed, then even when a person died, echoes of them persisted, because the bits of light and shadow they'd carried with them were still out there, mixed in with everything else.
You'd never know it, though, because reassembling those scattered fragments from across the world would be impossible.
So those echoes and memories were lost forever. Except for those who had the Odosein and could tap into everything at once. Do that, and you got a glimpse.
He didn't know why you were shown a particular glimpse, or the full implications of this knowledge. Could you search for specific people? If all Nether was connected, did that mean it was possible to stand in Narashtvik and manipulate shadows in Bressel?
Yet he felt awed, as if he'd been granted a holy revelation.
Worn out at last, he made his way back to their camp. Beck snored on. Gladik's eyes seemed to gleam as if they were open. But when Blaze looked again, they were shut tight.
When he dreamed of the sister sailing away from the feast in her canoe. When he woke, he still didn't know where she'd gone.
The day began the same as the others, but they hadn't been on their way for 2 hours when Gladik pulled them off course and onto an island. He canvassed the ground with his back hunched, murmuring to himself under his breath. Failing to find enough traces there, he moved onto the next island. After a minute of hunting around, he took a knee, gesturing in the air. A miniature Andrak unfurled, as small as the one they'd worked with before. They returned to the canoe, taking the demon with them. Gladik examined each island they passed. Spotting one that sported crumbling stone foundations, he directed them to it. There, he pieced together a second knee-high Andrak, returning with it to the boat.
It isn't far now.
Gladik held his fingers to his left temple. Be on the lookout for Blighted. The last thing we need is for him to know that we are coming.
Blaze kept both eyes on the water ahead of them. He was so intent on his task that he was taken completely by surprise when the forest fell away and the hell-painted hills burned before them.
The fiery patterns in the black stone were as subtle as a half-naked woman cartwheeling down the market street.
But that day, Blaze's eyes were pulled 200 yards north. There, a straight, light brown line extended from the swamps and into the heights, heading directly into the interior.
Blaze's mouth fell open.
Lyle's balls. It would have been nice of Era to tell us they had a road. Or were we supposed to figure that out for ourselves, too?
They'd stopped moving, but Gladik reached for the gunwale for support.
You have been to the Silent Spires, you buffoon. There is no road to it. At least not yet.
Blaze glanced between Gladik and the strip of clear earth.
That's why he's here, isn't it? To use his earth-moving talents to create an untainted path through the hills. So the Lich and his army can march on the spires without dying before they get there. Would that even work?
The Aedan Rane must believe so.
He can easily test his theory by sending a few Blighted along the road. Should they survive, his invasion will follow.
Beck's hand moved to the hilt of his sword.
We have to stop Dante from reaching the spires. If we can't unblight him, then we must destroy him.
We'll bring him back.
Blaze could hear the tightness in his own voice.
And then we'll kill the fucking lich.
They retreated a short way into the swamp, bringing the canoe into some shrubs at the edge of an island. Gladik gestured toward the distant road, nodding to his Andrak. The pair of demons slipped into the water, swimming across it and emerging on the grassy strip bordering the wasteland. As soon as the Star Eater set foot on the bare rock, they seemed to blink from sight, the black of their bodies nearly matching the color of the ground beneath them. A slight ripple across the shinier parts of the rock was the only sign they were moving. The three humans sat in the canoe in silence. Every time a dragonfly buzzed past, Blaze's eyes locked to it, watching for any indication it was under Dante's control. An hour later, Gladik lifted his head, gazing into the hills. The two little demons returned to the swamp, surfacing next to the boat. Gladik furrowed his brow, silently conversing with them.
Dante is working on the end of the road some 2 miles from here. He appears to be alone.
Blaze took up his paddle.
Shall we? Not yet, I think. Better to wait until later today, when he has exhausted his power extending the road. If he attempts to go elsewhere, I will know of it.
Much as he wanted to rush in then and there, Blaze had to agree to the tactical sensibility of the plan, which did little to make the ensuing wait any less excruciating. Gladik sent one Andrak back into the wasteland to observe Dante from a distance, assigning the other to patrol the swamps around the canoe to make sure nothing was creeping up on them. Mid-afternoon, the first Andrak dashed out of the hills and crossed to the canoe. Gladik nodded as it passed its thoughts or memories to him, or however it was that the priest communicated with his bloodthirsty demons.
Dante seems to have finished for the day, Gladik said. The time is now.
Blaze's pulse doubled.
Beck, can I make a request?
You may, Beck said.
While you're connected to him, can you also make him shit himself?
The knight frowned.
I don't understand.
Do you think his condition has filled his bowels with poisons?
I think we'll never get a chance like this again. Gladik clenched his hand in front of his chest.
Before we go forth, remember what will happen if we let ourselves get killed. We will lose Beck, who may be the only knight of Odosain in the country who is able to venture outside of the spires. We will lose the Abaquen, delivering it to the hands of the enemy. We will lose our own lives, and with them, Tanara Tain will lose one of its few remaining hopes. And when Dante completes his path to the Silent Spires, and the Aedan Rane tears down the towers, the land's last hope will fall with them.
Blaze smiled hard.
Do you think I don't understand the cost of failure? I fought more wars than you've started, and I'm ready for this one.
Gladik nodded once.
Blaze brought the canoe into the boundary of the swamp.
Once the others were out, he dragged it into the grass and flipped it upside down. He got a glass jar from his pack. The bearded crab sat in the bottom, resigned to its new lot in life.
Perhaps he should have kept it just in case, but Blaze wasn't sure that he'd be back. And if he did return, one way or another, he wouldn't need it anymore. Besides, if he was about to die, it would be nice to have done one more act of kindness before the end, however small.
He removed the perforated lid, set the jar on its side, and waited for the crab to scuttle out onto the bank. It vanished into the grass. Blaze stepped into the hell-painted hills. Heat baked from the black rock like a brick oven. A hot breeze blew down to the swamps. Blaze had already been sweating, but he was now dripping with it, blasted from below by the stone and above by the sun. Gladik waved his hand, shading them with a flattened circle of nether. This helped just enough.
Blaze made for the road. After the toe-grabbing crags of the warped landscape, walking on the hard-packed earth felt like the difference between swimming in stormy seas and canoeing over placid waters. In the steady wind, some of his sweat began to cool. As they neared the crown of the first hill, Blaze motioned the others down, then crawled forward until he was just past the top. The road continued through the valley, and the next hill, so smooth and straight it looked like it had been painted there by a Norrin god. He watched the landscape for a full minute, then backed up to the other side of the hill.
"No sign of him yet," he told Gladik and Beck. "Or of anything else."
Gladik pushed up his lower lip.
"You know him better than anyone. Does this feel correct to you?"
"We've fought before. I'd advise you to assume that we're not going to take him by surprise. But as long as Beck strips the nether from him, all we've got to deal with is a half-decent swordsman."
He crossed the ridgeline again, heading down the slope, one hand resting on the hilt of a sword. Beck whispered to himself steadily, generating a trickle of the stream, which floated along beside him. The road leveled out momentarily, leading them past a snarled twist of rocks that grasped from the ground like broken fingers.
Shadows flashed from the rocks. If the nether had been headed straight for the three of them, Gladik might have been able to deflect it in time. Instead, the darkness plunged into the soil. The dirt fell away beneath Blaze's feet, sinking downward, as if it were draining into the center of the world. They fell.
17. The ground dropped away faster than they fell. Another few seconds, and Dante would stop what he was doing, allowing them to complete the process of what they were doing, and splat all over the solid rock at the bottom of the hole.
"Warlock!"
Beck reached out his arm. Splinters of gold streaked upward.
The ground stopped vanishing beneath them. Blaze had expected something like that, had been hoping for it anyway, and landed on his feet, tucking into a roll. The strap snapped on one of his sandals, which flew away to the other side of the dark, circular pit. They were a good 20 feet down. Gladik was breathing in quick gasps. Ether flared, wrapping around his bloody shin and ankle. Catching a glimpse of bone, Blaze was extremely glad to be momentarily blinded as the light did its work. Gladik let out a shuddering sigh of relief. The ground beneath them glowed white. He swept his hand to the left, as if he were knocking a pile of dishes from a table. Slowly, the earth retook its original shape below them, elevating them back toward the surface. A face stuck out over the edge of the hole. The long black hair looked the same as ever, but the rest of what Blaze saw made his guts clench tight. Dante's face was gaunter than Gladik's, and as eggshell white as the blighted. The eyes were sunken, switched from a greyish hue to a light and vivid blue. His body somehow looked more brittle yet much tougher, like the trunk of a stunted mountainside tree that would still be clinging to its crag long after everyone alive today was long buried.
"You shouldn't have come here."
Even his voice was different. There was a brassy ring to it that made Blaze feel like he'd been whacked in the head.
"You should have run away."
Blaze stepped into his lost sandal, giving the broken straps a hasty knot around his calf.
"And you should have known I'm much too dumb to act with anything approaching reason.
You saw that I was watching you, Gladik said. You conserved your strength while pretending to spend it. And when the demon withdrew, you moved to ambush us.
You talk like I've committed treason, Dante said. But I've acted exactly in line with my orders.
This brings you joy? Serving the Aedan Rane like a trained dog?
Why wouldn't I be happy to perfect the world?
I do not see perfect. I see enslavement.
That's because your eyes are as cloudy as your urine, you gnarled old goat. History is the soil that all fights and wars grow from. That's why we're going to erase it.
What? History?
Dante snorted. Are your ears as weak as your eyes? Yes, we're going to erase history, along with everything else that divides people from each other. After a while of that, we might even be able to give them their free will back. With everyone united in worship of the Aedan Rane, who will be happy to execute you from 1,000 miles away if you ever undermine his law, what's there going to be to fight about?
But you would bring the world to the apocalypse for this? You would destroy everything?
No. We'll leave plenty of trees and animals around. Those are more or less fine. It's the people who need a reset. Aron cursed us when his mill broke, and everything's been awful ever since. As for the apocalypse, we only need one of those, after which we get eternal harmony. Which doesn't sound as profound as it is. So I want you to take a second to contemplate the meaning of eternal. Dante paused, like the master at a university.
Got it.
Now compare that to the current system of non-stop bloodshed and misery that's presently scheduled to go on until the end of time. If you support that, then I'll happily suggest that you are the real monster.
Something small and frightened reached for Blaze's heart. He booted it aside.
Sounds great, except for the part where you murder or blight every living soul, and the part where you can't guarantee that this glorious eternal paradise will ever come about in the first place. How do you know the White Leech is telling you the truth? Do you really suppose you can trust a fellow who intends to kill literally everyone?
I've heard him speak. He believes. He's had hundreds of years to plan this. And in a few more weeks, he'll have the power to achieve it.
Dante's eerily blue eyes moved to Beck's sword. It was sheathed, but the swamp dragon horn hilt identified it at once as Odo Sein.
Why exactly did you come out here?
To kill me?
No, probably not. If you'd worked out a sound method of attacking those like us, you would have used it against the Aedan Rane, both to break the main threat and in the hope that killing him would release me and the others from what he's made of us.
It wouldn't, by the way.
What's done is done.
So if you aren't here to kill me, you're here to rescue me, aren't you?
How? Did you think you could simply talk me out of serving the man who'll save the world?
We have no such illusions, Gladik said. I know that when he takes your will as well, much in the way a father would take a knife from a toddler much too young to use it.
Then you'd have to undo the taking, wouldn't you?
Dante laughed ringingly.
You think you can reverse the will of the Aedan Rane?
We can. Blaze took half a step forward. Over the course of their talk, Gladik had used the ether to return the earth to its original state, and they were now at ground level, standing 20 feet away from Dante.
There's a way to unblight people. We can do the same for you.
That's not possible.
Why don't we try it and find out?
Stay where you are. Dante lifted one hand, then slowly lowered it.
How would you do this?
Simple. Sort of. The Lich has taken something vital from you. All we have to do...
Silence!
Gladik barred his arm across Blaze's chest.
You must not tell him the process. He will relay it to his master, who will work to negate it from ever working again.
What's it matter? We're about to turn him. After that, he won't want to tell the Lich.
And if it doesn't work, then there's no secret to expose to the White Lich, is there?
You're lying to me, Dante said. He was the only one among them that wasn't sweating. As unhealthy as he looked, he also looked capable of sitting in the hell-painted hills for 30 years without suffering the slightest discomfort.
If you have no way to undo this, then there's nothing left to talk about.
He took your remnant from you, didn't he? The bit of ether that's like your trace. That's what turned you into one of his underliches. By using the Odyssein, we can transfer a new remnant into you.
Not if I resist you. Even he has limits, but the Aedan Rane is the only one who can take a trace or a remnant from the unwilling.
Unless you have the Abba Quen.
Don't worry, your lord will know what it is.
Dante frowned. Gaunt though his face was, it had become ageless, the wrinkles of sun and age wiped smooth. He turned and paced to his right, circling them.
You really can do this, can't you? You found a way. Or, at least you think you did.
Don't act that surprised. Now let's get this over with. You'll thank us afterwards.
I can't believe you actually think you're going to win. If the Lich lets you live to serve him, you're going to be so embarrassed about this.
Have you always been this arrogant? Or did I not notice because it was usually turned against someone else? We're going to bring you back to who you were. You can't stop us, and you don't have a choice. Please, go willingly.
I've given it a lot of thought, and I'm going to tell you to go to hell.
Blaze clenched his teeth.
You huge idiot. We can save you.
No, Dante said. You can't. Still pacing, and without turning toward them, Dante flung out his left hand. Golden splinters cracked from his body and fell to the ground. A storm of nether shot from his palm, roiling toward Gladik. Gladik shouted in surprise, throwing himself backwards as he met the darkness with a lightning-shaped prong of ether. The two forces boomed against each other, dispersing into ghostly ash. Half hidden, behind the cloud, a black blade seared toward Beck. Beck's eyes flew wide. He tried to duck, but the blade swerved to match his motion. It spun through his neck. His head twirled to the dirt road, landing with a puff of dust. Choking in shock, Gladik hammered at Dante with paired streams of darkness and light. Dante opened his hand. With a casual gesture, he threw out a barrage of nether, stopping the streams in a sizzling collision. Blaze found his swords in his hands,
He couldn't remember drawing them. Netho snapped up and down the black steel. His heart was so loud he couldn't hear Gladik, who looked to be shouting something. Blaze took a step forward. Dante lifted his hands over his head.
Stop this!
Gladik let the Netho twist in his hand. Blaze halted, swords angled from his waist.
You killed him!
Gladik's voice was shaky, suddenly old.
Oh!
Dante laughed. While you were racing back and forth across the swamps like such brave heroes, I was studying the Odosein, and asking the Aedan Rane for everything he knew about it. Though he was close to an answer, he was missing a few key pieces. But thanks to my training at the Spires, I was able to fill in the gaps. It was challenging, practicing against myself. I wasn't sure it was going to work until the moment I freed myself from the Knight's binds.
That's why Beck couldn't protect us at the Bastion, Blaze said. It wasn't that he screwed up. The Lich must have told the sorcerers there how to break through the Odosein. But they weren't quite good enough to stop us.
Gladik opened and closed his left hand.
The Odosein has protected these lands against sorcerers for centuries. If it could be broken, someone would have done so long ago.
Dante nudged Beck's head with his toe, rolling it so it faced them. One of the knight's eyes was coated with dust. I think he'd argue otherwise. The knights of Odosein used the stream to block or sever your connection to the Netho. But all they're doing is blocking the connection that's obvious to you. Which means they're undone by their own game, aren't they?
I can't even begin to follow that, Blaze said.
You don't have to. You never have. All you've ever had to do is slap together a few ridiculous ideas and occasionally stick a sword in someone.
Gladik crinkled his brow.
Since all Netho is connected, as long as you can access your trace, you can use that to reach out to any other shadows as well.
That's one way to do it, yes.
Dante let his hands hang below his hips, Netho swirling around them like a typhoon-stirred sea.
Anyway, your knight's dead. You can't stop me from wielding the shadows. And if you're honest with yourselves, you'll admit that I can murder you both.
When the opposite was true, you told me I had no choice and had to submit to you.
So don't be a couple of hypocrites. Bow down to me.
You have traveled far with me, Galand. You know that I would rather die than serve the Aedan Rane.
Then it's a good thing he's more open-minded than you are. He's agreed to add you to the ranks of his lieutenants. He told me to kill Blaze, but I think if I deliver the both of you to him, he'll change his mind on that.
I tell you for the last time that I will never serve. Quit your bullshit grandstanding. We're offering you power like no one's ever had.
The power to reshape everything.
To rebuild our world according to a grand plan, rather than to watch vain idiots brutalize each other over petty resentments.
And if that isn't enough for you, how about this? We'll give you immortality, an eternity to learn and study and develop your skills. You know you've always wanted that,
I did. And you're 10 times as much of an asshole as I ever was.
I have indeed wanted that. Always.
Gladick's voice came out in a croak.
But I have fought hard these last months to regain the pieces of my being that I paid in pursuit of such powers. I would rather die than walk any further down the path you offer.
Oh, come on. 100 years from now, you will look back at this moment and laugh at yourself.
Dante swiveled his icy eyes to Blaze.
I know you hate the idea. I'm sure you think it's immoral, and that no outcome can justify what we have to do to achieve it.
Blaze rested his hand on one of his swords, which he'd sheathed to prevent it from draining his trace.
Revoking the freedom or the lives of everyone currently alive? Yeah, it's a little extreme.
I'll tell you this. When he converts you, all of those feelings will go away. All of your guilt, your doubt, your fears. And you will be grateful to him for his gift.
Are you saying this because you believe it yourself? Or because he's making you believe it?
What difference does it make?
Blaze met Dante's stare.
I want to know who's telling me this. The friend I've had since before we could grow beards, or the man whose mind has been stolen by a maniac who means to kill everyone you've ever known?
It's me. I'm still here.
Are you? Then do you remember the time Cali sent us to investigate the thefts at Lanavar?
The border town.
Human merchants were reporting their wares going missing. People were blaming it on the Norrin.
Cali was afraid the whole town was going to erupt in violence.
Not just violence. Cali suspected King Modigan was wary that the humans were getting too close to seeing the Norrins as their equals, which would be trouble for the whole hunting Norrin down and enslaving them thing. If Modigan could provoke Lanavar into tossing out its Norrin, or better yet, massacring them, it'd secure Gascon policy in the area for another generation.
We traveled to Lanavar, interviewed the human merchants, along with the Norrin trappers and artists who traded with them.
Eventually, the trail took us to a fellow named Bandon.
Dante chuckled tinnily. He played dumb. But there was something off about him, so we started keeping tabs on him. A few nights later, he took his dogs out for a walk. He had this entire pack of them, little yappers that couldn't have weighed more than 10 pounds apiece. The most useless things you've ever seen. And brought them into the city. While he waited in the old churchyard, his dogs snuck into the merchants' shops and stole everything they could carry in their mouths.
I still don't believe it. If that fool had put as much effort into honest work as he did into training his dogs, he could have bought half the town.
Blaze grinned, almost lost in the memory. But the face in front of him wouldn't let him forget.
There's something I've always wondered. After Lyra died, we went our separate ways, lived our own lives. 5 years later, I hadn't so much as sent you a letter, but you were still trying to find me.
Why?
Why keep searching when at that point we'd spent more time as enemies than we had as friends?
Dante tipped back his head, gazing into the punishing sun. His face hardened by the process that had turned him into something less and more than a man, softened with nostalgia, and regret, and pride.
We'd done great things together. The end of the war destroyed that, tore us apart. But I wanted to believe that wasn't the end. That any tragedy can be undone.
If you can set aside your anger and pain,
and reach out in hope.
We can do that now. Come with us to the Silent Spires. Era can help you. We will remove this thing from you. It didn't have to end before, and it doesn't have to end now.
You don't understand, Dante said. He almost sounded sad. It ended the instant you refused to kneel to the Aedan Rane.
Shadows erupted from his hands, raging toward them in black malevolence. Galadic cursed, battering at them with the ether he'd kept close all the while. No one's mouth was open, yet Blaze heard screaming in his ears. He reached for his swords. He couldn't seem to draw them. It was like they'd been welded into their sheaths. His vision blurred. He turned and ran back down the road toward the swamp.
Coward! Gladick shouted. Deserter!
If the words were meant to shame him, they'd have to wait in line behind the army currently sieging Blazer's conscience. He sprinted onward, knees and elbows pumping, losing himself to the unique euphoria of running as fast as you can. A fine layer of sweat developed across his body. Footsteps smacked the ground. Gladick loped down the road after him, his long legs carrying him along the smooth dirt with a speed that seemed impossible for his years. Dante ran in his wake, hunched forward like a wolf before it makes its lunge. Nether shot from his hands. Without looking back, Gladick countered it with tridents of ether, the glittering dust of their combat falling behind them as they ran on. Blaze crested the hill. The swamp filled the horizons, a humid haze lingering in the air above the trees. There would be no sanctuary there either, would there? But what else was there to do but keep going in the face of hopelessness? To see if some kindly god or turn of blind chance would take pity on your miserable life? He thundered down the incline, knees jarring. Two black shapes shot past his shins. The Andrak. They bounded past Gladick, light shining through their joyous grins, and threw themselves at Dante. Dante stopped and fell back, reaching for his limited supply of ether. Blaze thought Gladick might turn around and join the battle, but the old priest continued toward the swamp. Ether and nether twirled between Dante and the two little star-eaters. The demons were already looking raggedy, but by the time Dante finally put them down, Blaze had opened up a lead of a quarter mile. The air was already growing cooler, or at least less scalding, and damper. Trees crowded the edge of the living land. Blaze reached the grass, veering south toward the canoe. He beat Gladick to the boat by 200 yards. He flipped it over and shoved it into the water. He stepped in with one foot, then turned around, sighed, and waited. Gladick arrived with a face so red it looked like all his skin had left him to seek more pleasant realms. Blaze clambered into the canoe, and the old man followed. Dante was still 1,000 feet away, advancing steadily along his road. The hell-painted hills wavered as the sun baked from their naked slopes. Blaze took up the paddle, giving himself a good splash to calm down his overheated skin, and pushed off into the swamp.
"Why did you run?"
Gladick gasped the words out between breaths. "To get away from there and over to here.
And what has this relocation and geography solved? We could have killed him."
"I'm not so sure. But even if that was true, So what? We kill him, and then what do we do? Beck's dead. We can't kill the Lich. Killing Dante wouldn't even slow down the advance.
In what way is running away a superior solution?
There is no solution, you dogged shithead. We've lost. We might as well get ourselves and our loved ones as far away from here as possible and try to enjoy however long we have left.
Blaze looked over his shoulder, but the trees and shrubs were already too thick to tell if Dante was still after them.
And if that's inevitable, if it's only a matter of time until the White Lich claims us all, then killing Dante doesn't even make sense. I know I can't let myself be a part of the Lich's new world, but if Dante's there, maybe he'll make it slightly less dark.
Gladick let out a long, slow breath.
You have fallen to despair. I can see this as clearly as I can see my own hand, for I have worn its burden myself. I just lost my oldest friend, and, coincidentally, condemned everyone in the world to death or hell. Forgive me if I'm not at my bubbliest. Your reaction is natural, but it has blinded you. We have one last chance. How's that? Slip a new remnant into Dante's porridge, then all have a big laugh after he eats it?
Beck is dead, but you remain alive. Last night I saw you lost in the Golden Stream. Beck told you exactly what must be done. Let us return, and you will free Dante from his chains.
Blaze stopped paddling, twisting around.
We can't! We left the Aberquen behind!
You left the Aberquen behind. Others among us have more foresight.
Gladick reached into his jabot and withdrew the ivory carving. The gecko was smudged with blood.
Happy birthday.
Blaze took up the idol. Certain he was about to fumble it into the water and never see it again.
Even if this damn thing works, I don't know how to lock him out of the nether. He'll rip me to shreds, and then tear the shreds into bits.
You cannot blame despair for this level of stupidity. For surely I had intended to do nothing to help you, observing from afar. However, your petulant whining has convinced me to assist you. I will counter his sorcery while you restore his remnant.
That could work, but aren't we overlooking something here? Like the minor fact I don't know how to use the Odyssein?
You know enough to make the connection Beck described. Do so now, and be quick about it.
But I still can't reach the stream.
I have seen your efforts. You are far closer than you believe. How can it be that I have more faith in you than you have in yourself?
Blaze closed his eyes tight. An ocean of doubts spread before him. He breathed in, relaxing every muscle, then breathed out, tensing them all. Gladick was scowling like he was working his way through a theological manuscript dense enough to brain a bull with. Blaze started the practice of forest, then broke off, heart rattling, and envisioned the cabin in the Wodens. The snows. The ice on the lake. His boys and girls pelting each other with snowballs. Golden chips spun about him. The air shimmered, as if he could part it like a pair of curtains and open a view to elsewhere in the world. He swooped toward the fragments of stream, but there was no need. They were already coming to his hand. And they would have the night before, wouldn't they? He'd been too shaken up, first by his reverie
then by the glimpse of the two sisters, to grab at the stream until it was already fading away. Before the flecks in front of him could do the same, he sent them toward Gladik. His motion was clumsy, like trying to throw a plank by the middle instead of the end. But a few of them stuck. Strands and planes of black and white energy extended from all sides of Gladik's body. Blaze maneuvered between them, fluttering as awkwardly as a fat-bodied moth as he hunted for the connection that would lead him to the remnant. He slipped around a wide plane of nether, then a tangle of white cords. Behind these, a thin pillar of glowing pearl light connected the earth to the heavens. There was no mistaking the remnant. Blaze guided the stream to the pearly strand. The golden matter caught fast, binding Blaze to the light. He clapped his hands so hard they stung.
I can do it! I don't know how, or how much, but I can do it. Then we will return now. Right now? How about I take a few days to practice first?
Dante and the Aedan Rane have already learned how to break the Odyssean's control over the Nether.
You just told Dante exactly how the blight is removed. He and the Lich will work ceaselessly to learn how to stop this rite as well. We cannot afford to give them a single day, or it might never work again. So we have to go now, huh?
This thought should have been terrifying. Instead, Blaze was compelled to laugh out loud.
I suppose it's like they always say. When everyone who actually knows what they're doing has been murdered, why not send in the idiots?
He flipped the canoe, nose for tail, and paddled back toward the hell-painted hills, eyes darting to every movement, which in the lively swamp was non-stop. Gladik reopened a cut near the end of the stump of his right arm. They broke from the trees, entering a clear patch of water that lapped directly against the hills. Dante stood 200 yards up the shore. He was staring off into the swamp, turned away from them at a quarter profile. It didn't seem as though he should be able to see them, but he swiveled to face them the second their canoe poked from the trees. Despite the distance, Blaze caught the blue flash of his eyes. Blaze brought the boat up to land and vaulted into the grass. Gladik exited in pained stages, as if his legs had already stiffened up following their dash from the wasteland. Blaze felt the nether flow to Gladik's call. They exchanged a nod. Blaze strolled along the bank, keeping one hand near his sword, for what little good it could do against Dante. Dante watched them come, but didn't budge from his spot.
Nether spiraled around his arms.
Blaze stopped 20 feet away from him. Dante was smiling. On his new face, it didn't look right.
I never thought I'd see you run away.
Blaze tossed his head.
What are you talking about? We've run away from tight spots 1,000 different times. I've gone through more shoes than most armies.
But you've never run away when running meant losing. And the only way to win was to stand and fight.
I'm here now.
He glanced at the swamp, looking thoughtful, as he sent a part of his mind to the cabin in the Wodens.
You said you and Daddy Lich figured out how to break the Odyssean together. But he's been elsewhere all this while, hasn't he? Do you two have a loon-like link between you or something?
What does that matter?
I want to send him a message.
Which is?
That he should run, Blaze said. Run far away, and never show himself again.
Or else, the last thing he'll see is my sword, and the last thought he'll have is to wonder what his head is doing so far from his body. He picked up the stream he'd been generating as they spoke, and snapped it at Dante. Dante tried to blast at the golden sparks with nether, but the shadows passed over them without leaving a mark. Showing his teeth,
Dante redirected the Nether at Blaze.